And for me, I just try to be flexible. And then each ingredient, I just sort of consider how it's going to cook best with the rest of the things on the pizza.
Okay, maybe Naples is not the only pizza city in the world, but maybe the world is a pizza city.
Pizza City Fest always brings together some of the biggest names in the industry. And this year's event in Los Angeles was no different. You're listening to this show because you really care about pizza, right? And what's the most important part of pizza? The dough, of course. So say hello to the Dough Whisperers, three of the most talented bakers on the West Coast. That conversation straight ahead.
Straight fryer pepperoni.
I need a deep dish pepperoni and a thin sausage to go.
Can I get two cheesivores and one Detroit?
Can I get one large pep, one large sausage, and one large pep special?
This is Pizza City, the podcast dedicated to the art, craft, and passion behind the world's greatest pizzas. I'm Steve Dolinsky, author of Pizza City USA, the ultimate Chicago pizza guide, and founder of Pizza City Tours and Pizza City Fest. And welcome, everybody. Great to have you along with us again for another edition of Pizza City. Very happy to report we hit it out of the ballpark last weekend. We had 40 of the best pizza makers in Southern California, all under one roof for one weekend. No lines, well, maybe one or two. But all in all, an incredible time with the most amazing people. I encourage you to look at the Instagram feeds from any of the top people in the pizza world in LA for proof. So rewarding and just so wonderful to be with everybody for a couple of days. Or just check out Pizza City Fest. All the information's right there. All right, we're already busy planning Nashville in the fall, and we'll have more information about that event in a couple of weeks. Well, a big part of the Pizza City Fest experience is the daily panel discussions and the educational demos. It's not just about stuffing your face with pizza. This year, we let off with yet another edition of a panel we call The Dough Whisperers, featuring Daniele Uditi from Pizzana in L.A., and also now in Dallas and Houston, apparently. Sarah Minnick from Lovely's 5050 in Portland, Oregon. You may remember her from the Chef's Table series on pizza. By the way, she's also got a James Beard nomination for Outstanding Chef in the Country. Kudos to her. And then, of course, Tony Gemignani from San Francisco, of Tony's Pizza Napolitana and Capo's and Slice House, which is sprouting up everywhere in the country. This was 45 minutes of pure pizza appreciation. Our moderator was Karen Palmer, the LA contributing food editor for SF Gate. And we're going to begin today's show with her asking our panel about their first pizza epiphany.
Guys, thank you so much for being here. My first question is kind of basic, like, when did you get the pizza bug? What was the first moment that you were just like, this is how I want to express myself in food?
I have had a restaurant in one way or another for about 20 years now. And it started off that I had a restaurant with my sister, and we ran the front of the house, and other people cooked the food. And I became really interested in that part of it. And when before I had just been interested in how the front of the house operated and running restaurants from that side of things, I started doing that when I was like 17, running coffee, drive-through windows and things like that. And I always loved it. And even in college, I was like on the side running like the student-run cafe. And someone said to me, it kind of seems like you like that the most of everything that you're doing, including other than the thing you're studying. So I realized that that was true. And after I opened a restaurant, I started to be really interested in what was going on in the kitchen. I started to pay a lot of attention to whoever I was working with, who was the chef. And so I started to experiment at home and cook a lot more and go to the farmer's market and start to see what vegetables were available. And then we decided to open a pizza place that could encompass all of those vegetables and ingredients that were grown locally. And pizza was just a really great way. It seemed automatic for me just to start with a dough and be able to top it with whatever was around and get them all to work in the right way. So that's how I first started.
Tony?
You know, you fall in love with pizza at an early age. I think it's one of your favorite foods as a kid, you know, for me. So, you know, my brother was opening up a pizzeria. I was 17 years old, getting out of high school. Wasn't sure what I was going to do in life. You know, I've been in the business for 33 years now. I fell in love with it. And really cooking for somebody, you know, that self-gratification that you have was very special. You know, watching my mom cook, like, any Italian household or just growing up in a family that just loves cooking, you know, watching my mom cook. I grew up on nearly 20 acres of apricots, cherries, fava beans. We grew everything, you know, when I went in my backyard, I'd grab basil, I'd pick tomatoes, squash, oranges, lemons, you name it. So growing up, food was just such a staple, and then pizza became my life. Like I said, I started when I was 17. I just got out of high school. It took me 17 years to open up my first pizzeria. And then after that, I opened up Tony's Pizza Napolitana in San Francisco, which was actually opened just about 15 years ago. So, yeah, I love pizza. I live it. I love every style. It's something when I delve into the business, I celebrate every style. And, you know, New York, Chicago is very territorial back in the day. This is what I do. Neapolitans hate Romans, and New York hate Chicago. It's very much like baseball or soccer. For me, I looked at it as, you know, pasta. I can't say I love spaghetti and hate bucatini, and I love lasagna, but I can't stand manicotti. If it's done right, I think it's a beautiful thing, and I celebrate everything when it comes to pizza. So,
Daniele?
You want to know why I love pizza? Well, I'm the result of child labor. That's what I am. So, in my family, I grew up in a family where my mom was a chef. My auntie is a very old woman, Neapolitan woman from the south that does bread. So we had an underground bread oven where we used to make bread for all the salumerias, the delis, in my little town close to Naples in Caserta. So at the end of the day, we all used to live under the same roof. And as a kid of 8 to 9 years old, I wake up very early in the morning at 3 or 4 a.m. hearing noises of people smoking cigarettes and mixing dough in the same room, which was fantastic. And as a kid, you see all these people having fun mixing the dough in a wooden madia, right? The madia is the container made in wood where you, in the old days, used to make dough by hand. And as a kid and loving to get dirty and seeing these people all getting dirty with slimes, basically, for me, the dough was my first approach to fun, to slimes. Then my family discovered that I actually was good at checking oven temperature, shaping the dough. I said, you know what, you have a talent for this. So you're free labor, so get to work. So basically, but at the end of the day, while we were making bread, was also with the leftover bread, we used to make pizza, right? So at 9 years old, I had breakfast with pizza with mortadella, like just bread with mortadella, and just crushed tomato that my auntie used to do in the basement that every Italian, southern Italian nonnas and moms have in their basement. So we used to open jars, crush fresh tomatoes. And as a kid, I used to go by smelling like an amazing pizza god to school. So I was the envy of everybody. So pizza's been my life since the day I was born, and I still do it this day. I still try to eat as much as I can. It doesn't matter where it comes from. If it's dough, cheese, and sauce, I'm in it.
I love it. Thank you, Daniele. I'm curious for each of you. You know, there's obviously a lot of work that happens between pizza just being a passion or something that you grew up with to perfecting your dough. Can you each talk a little bit about, and Tony, obviously you do several different styles, like, you know, how you worked on that, what are the indicators to you that it's an excellent pizza dough?
I mean, I am a big fan of all types of pizza dough. It's true, I'm a little bit the same way. Like, give me pizza, I love it. But for the dough that we use at Lovely's, it really came from a love of bread first, and discovering sort of the West Coast baking tradition with some whole wheat, usually sourdough, and just that crusty, you know, crust and just the moist inside, chewy inside. I think like that's what I started to do first when I learned baking, and I just really translated it into pizza and tried to get the same effect. And one that was sourdough, tangy, really crusty, good with different vegetables and all different types of things kind of complement each other, and that's where mine comes from. Tony?
Yeah, dough's, you know, the foundation of any great pizza, and balance is so important. You know, when you look at different styles of pizza, there's that traditional style, Neapolitan, it could be Detroit or Old Forge, Roman, Sicilian grandma. So for me, it's not over complex. I know a lot of people come to me and say, you're from San Francisco and, you know, I taste your starter, but, you know, I thought it would have been like really more tang in your back. And it's one of those things I said to that person, to a writer once. I said, yeah, do I want you to remember me for my starter or do I want you to remember me for my pizza? And when it comes to each bite, it should take you through a journey. It should be three flavor profiles when it comes to pizza. It could be sweet, savory, salty, and sweet could be the tomato sweet. It could be slightly acidic from the tomatoes, but a balance of sweetness as well. But when it comes to dough, you know, it's something that we work on every day. Humidity, hydration, you're always trying to add more hydration, blend, you know, you blend flours, you're looking at your salt content. It's something that you always want to make better. If I go to Old Forge and I have an Old Forge pizza, it should be a little dense and maybe bready, which is a term that you may not want to hear, but that's Old Forge. I don't want to have an Old Forge and have a crumb structure that's like Roman. That could be cool and everything, but you may not understand the style. So I think that it's important to understand that, like, it's like having a pastrami on rye in New York and you have a pastrami on rye with Swiss. It should be Swiss. But I put Monterey Jack in it. And I said, well, it's better cheese, right? Yeah, but it's not really traditional. But it's better. Well, maybe not for the guy that grew up in New York that wanted to have that certain. So there's a lot of ways to look at dough in its entirety. And I look at it every day. And you're always trying to improve and understand it. And it's always something I think that we deal with in our restaurants. Nobody always has the perfect restaurant. Like at home, it's always 68 degrees or whatever that is. In the restaurant business, summer to winter to more humid environments, or as you grow, water's harder, softer. There's a lot of variables. So dough, there's so much variables. So it's like one of those things that I think we're always trying to strive to make it better.
So at the end of the day, the way I see it, like I am, you can hear it in my accent, I'm very, very Italian, Neapolitan. So when I came in the U.S., for me, the only style of pizza that was acceptable to be called pizza was Neapolitan. Right? So I came with this very close mentality, very proud, like talking very badly about every other pizza that I had in around me. I was like, my God, that is too cooked. That's a cookie for me. That's not even a pizza. But then the more I ate it, the more I was eating it, the more I told myself, I really like it. So why should I be stubborn and say to myself that that's not a good pizza? Instead of like being true to myself, like I love New York pizzas, I love Sicilian, I love Detroit, I love focaccia style pizza.
I'm curious if you two also have advice for, you know, budding pizzaiolos, what they should, you know, working with dough, you know, not getting frustrated. Like, what would you recommend to people?
Yeah, definitely, like being a little more accepting with what you're making, I think, is a huge key. And I think also being willing to let it change every day and like taking it, like I want it to be consistently good, but the consistency can be, you know, variable, and not getting like hard on yourself for an off bake or whatever else, because most pizza, especially like in early stages, if you start making it, it's going to be better. Like homemade pizza is very good. And you, like, even the worst pizza you make will probably be like better than a pizza that you could go buy, honestly. So I think, yeah, be a little less hard on yourself, be open-minded. I like that, like liking different styles, trying different styles, and making dough every day is a great way to learn for sure. You will just within a few weeks be more in tune with what's going on and watching the ebbs and flows of the whole thing, I think.
Maybe understanding the style that you want to make first. Is it deep dish? Is it Neapolitan or Neapolitan? Is it a pizza or style that you can cook in your home oven at 500 degrees with two stones or two steels? Or is it that uni and rock box that you want to elevate and do a neo-Neapolitan at 800 or 900 degrees? It's one of those things. What style do you love? What style can you recreate at home? What flour is best for that? There are flours that cook well at 500 degrees, and there's flours that cook better at 900 degrees. So understanding the style and the flour ingredients that go with it and the temperature is a key. It always goes back to dough. I mean, the maturation of a dough, is it 12 hours, 24 hours, 48 hours? Where is that sweet spot to make your pizza? So I think there's a lot to think about. But I always say, pick the style that you want, and then everything else comes don't fall in love with the oven and be like, yeah, I'm going to get an uni. It's great. And now I got to cook a deep dish in it. It's not really working out. Well, you almost chose the wrong oven for the type of style. So it's important to understand that.
Sarah, one of the things I found really interesting in your Chef's Table episode was the way that you use foraged and local ingredients. I'm curious to hear how all of you approach flavor combinations, topping combinations. Like, where do you get inspiration from? You know, love to hear a little bit about that.
I definitely use the if it grows together, it goes together theory. Usually if you go to the market, there are going to be like a whole collection of ingredients that go together really easily. And for me, I just try to be flexible. And then each ingredient, I just sort of consider how it's going to cook best with the rest of the things on the pizza. Like, do you roast it first? Is it raw? And I really collect kind of different methods of sizes you chop, sizes you combine. And I love foraged ingredients. I think they make really great pizza toppings. The other favorite thing I like to do is to pair them all with different cheeses. So if you work with a cheesemonger, you know, you can go talk to them about, like, I have nettles now, I need a super melter, or I have like fresh tomatoes and they're really wet, so I need a drier cheese. Like, to me, those considerations really help. And talking to different farmers, seeing what they love, seeing their favorite things that they grow, that's pretty much how I put these things together.
I think it could depend on the style. Like, if you're doing a Detroit-style pizza and you want to use brick cheese and blend it with cheddar, you're looking at St. Louis and you want to use Prevelle, or you're looking at Neapolitan and you want to use a fior di latte or a mozzarella di bufala and a San Marzano tomato. So there's regional styles, regional ingredients. That could be upside-down pizzas with whole milk mozz, sliced of Oreo, you know, part skim. So I think it's important to see that. Then you're looking at that maybe California-driven, farm-to-table, farmer's market style. And a lot of times people think that more ingredients go on before the pizza. It's really what you finish a pizza with, how you beautify it. Sometimes a home chef will just say, I want to put pepperoni, salami, mushroom, and sausage and olives and put my pizza in, and it comes out and it's a little too heavy on the sauce and it's soggy and it doesn't look that great and my cheese didn't melt well and you used a cheaper cheese. I mean, the access to ingredients are so amazing now. Stanislaus, DiNapoli, Escalon. I mean, you can see ingredients like grande cheese, which we're using or most of us are using. You literally go online and find great cheeses and ingredients or finishing cheeses, like she mentioned. So I think when it comes to the home chef, sometimes you just think, put as much as I can in, try and get it in the oven with that peel, take it out, and it really didn't cook well. I think really understanding the style and getting regional ingredients and looking for local ingredients, I think, is important. So,
the way I see when I choose ingredients is how can I tell a story? So when I came in Los Angeles, I discovered there was beautiful farmers market, right? So you go to the farmer's market, and most of the time, the inspiration comes from the people that you talk to. So there is a beautiful farmers, and I love hearing their story. I love even hearing the problem that they have sometimes when they have a bad crop of tomatoes. So the bug ate half of my lettuce, or my arugula. So basically, you have to base your doing on what's available out there. So I try to respect the work of the farmers, first of all, the most, at least when I can, but I also run a business, so certain items have to be in a certain way too. But when I create my pizza, especially the style that I do, which is, people call it neo-Neapolitan or Neapolitan, I call it my style, because that's the pizza that I used to do with my auntie with leftover bread. So I use Neapolitan oven. I use bread dough, and I cook it longer than Neapolitan crust, because I want the ingredient to hold on the crust. You know, Neapolitan pizza is not meant to be sliced and kneaded like this. Neapolitan pizza is meant to be folded and kneaded on the street, on the go, or in a nice restaurant, sitting down, knife and fork, and that's how you eat it. It's wet. So that's the style it is. People used to complain so much about that, and that's what I didn't want it to happen to me. It was a little bit scared for me doing straight Neapolitan, but at the end of the day, I went back to my childhood, and that's what I wanted to tell a story. So each pizza that I make is in between my story as an immigrant in the United States, so taking advantage of the beautiful produce that is available at a farmer's market, or telling a story of child labor, being working with my family.
Just a couple more questions, and then we'll open it up to you guys for your questions as well. I'm curious to hear from each of you. Obviously, we're here celebrating Los Angeles pizza. Aside from your city, what do you think are some of the most exciting pizza cities right now?
Wow, that's hard. I think partway into my pizza making career, so many people would come talk to me about like the pizza that was made in their city, and I'd be like, I haven't tried it. So I made a point to kind of go all everywhere. And I think for pure like history and, you know, informational purposes, I think New York City. I definitely loved seeing the really historic pizzerias and learning about like Sauce on Top and Deep Dish and all the different histories of those different pizzerias. I'm not saying like, I think there's many amazing American pizza cities and of course in Europe, but I think that gives you like the biggest bang for your buck as far as getting all the different styles and a bunch of different experiences there.
Yeah, I think LA, there's been definitely a renaissance of pizza in the last 5 or 8 years or so, especially now. You know, 15 years ago or so when Mozza opened, you saw Vito's that made a great New York slice out here. I think they were some of the first. And then Pizzana, you know, came in hard, opened up a lot of restaurants, really catapulted it. And then you see a lot of mom and pop shop opening up, young guys opening up. You see it on social. I know some of them out there. I think when you hit Tribute all the ways to Pizzana and you start going to everyone, Prime, some great pizza in LA now. It was never a pizza city. If anyone grew up here, it was really never known for that. San Francisco, I think, has been really strong. Of course, Portland, Seattle. But I think LA is, it's getting better and better. And it's no one can say right now that LA doesn't have good pizza. I mean, it's like saying Vegas doesn't have good pizza. Vegas has great pizza. And there was a renaissance there that John Arena started. And we came in 11 years ago. And you look at Good Pie, Secret Pizza, and you look at all these places there. So pizza's so worldwide now. I mean, you can say pizza's great in Korea, in Japan. It's so different. And I think it's evolved very fast. You can become pretty good in this industry pretty quickly. I think the access to the internet, Instagram, seeing it. I mean, the trips that we would take around, I think, are special. I think people have lost that because it's a little too accessible, saying, yeah, I can make Detroit. But have you ever been to Buddy's? No, but I can make it. It's good. But for me, it's about the experiences, the travels, the R&D. Before you could Google it, I mean, it's there's something that's old soul in me that I love to talk to an operator and been to Don Michele and waited in that line and sat there. I mean, going to the one in L.A. is just as amazing, but just to be in that experience in Napoli and Spaccanapoli, and it's hot and you're having a Coke and you're picking one or two styles, it's something very special about that. We're lucky to be where we are in the pizza world right now. It's a beautiful thing because I'll tell you right now, when I was a kid, there wasn't that many good options for pizza where I grew up. I mean, it was Uncle Joe's on the corner and I got a cheese pizza and I was happy with that. But right now, I think LA has some amazing, amazing pizzas.
Well, I would have to agree. Like, not because I'm in Los Angeles, but at the end of the day, when I opened up Pizzana 7 years ago, the only access to pizza that I had was Nancy Silverton, was Mozza, which was doing something resembling what we used to do in Naples as well, like taking fresh ingredients, put it on a pie, and showing it to people. I think the beauty about the U.S. is that because there is tons of Italian immigrants, the styles of the pizza changed in each city based on what kind of immigrants they were in the city. And then it got influenced even more by the other cultures. For example, a Pizzana, because my wife is Mexican, I make, right now it's a special, it's an elote pizza, which is Mexican street corn. And as a Neapolitan, if I say that to my country, they're gonna say, we are taking away your citizenship as a Neapolitan.
But guys, it's delicious. There is a Oaxacan cheese, which is called quesillo, street corn grilled on the spot. And even in the US, I even put pineapple on a freaking pizza. Now I'm going to go, guys.
No, you're fired, Daniela.
No, but at the end of the day, it's true. You know, the thing that I hate the most is like when there is when people tell you, no, you don't have to do that. You cannot do that, right? And I know there is more a proud thing that people say is like, no, pineapple is not good on a pizza. I agree. It's not good on a pizza with tomato, at least for me. But if paired well, even pineapple on a pizza can be good. So I did a pizza and I called it sacrilegious, just because for the hell of it. And in Naples, you don't even know what happened, guys. Like, I was a nobody before coming in the United States because I put pineapple on a pizza. If I go back to Naples, they're waiting me with, like, a witch's hunt. Something changed in me. It's like, okay, maybe Naples is not the only pizza city in the world, but maybe the world is a pizza city. So.
On that note, why don't we open up the floor to questions? Does anybody have questions?
He's talking about starters. Use a Pulish or Biga. It's basically a starter that's a pre-ferment. One has more water. One's more hydrated than the other. It's personal preference. I hate when I went to Italy and said, it's Biga. You have to use Biga. It's like me telling you, you got to drink Coke and not Pepsi. Well, I like Pepsi. Well, what do you like? Do you like Coke or the flavor profile of Pepsi? I like Pepsi. Then use Pepsi. In the industry, sometimes you go online or talk to people and say it has to be bigger, Biga, or it's personal preference. It's what do you like after you make your dough and it's the end result and you bite into it. What do you prefer? Is it a little bit more acidic like a Pulish would be? Does the starter strengthen your dough a little bit? Would you add a little bit more water to it? Does the Biga have a different flavor profile? I mean, I can't tell you to use 5% Biga, 10% Pulish. It's personal preference. And you may say, screw all that. I don't want to do it. I just want to make pizza and use yeast, which you can, or I want to bulk ferment. So it's a common question. Like, which one do I use, Tony? Tell me. I'm like, which one do you like?
I have a question. Well, on this topic, you know, because at the end of the day, I use the Pulish and I use Biga too, right? Biga, mostly I use it to make bread. In Italy, it's easier to use, at least for me. What I notice with Pulish, it's a little bit harder to handle it, especially if you go longer fermentation with the Pulish, because it can have a percentage of ethanol on top. You see the separation sometimes happens with the flours and the water and the dough. Sometimes if you leave the Pulish fermenting too long, sometimes you have this smell that is almost alcoholic.
Yeah. Maintaining a Pulish every day is more difficult because the pH can go south on you. So a high hydrated starter can, you know, if you don't feed it right, keep it in a clean container and have it at a controlled temperature, it can go south on you. It'll separate, it'll have a sludge, and that's kind of maintaining it. It's easier to control a Biga and loosen it out and slack it out to make it, you know, a wetter starter. So maintaining, yeah, Biga's a lot easier. Well, commercial yeast can tighten it. Sometimes commercial yeast can have ascorbic acid in it, which is vitamin C, and ascorbic acid will make your dough tighter, stronger, and raise almost a protein value. So if you see in a flour, there's ascorbic acid in it, it's a 13% protein, it could be like a 13.5. So depending on the yeast that you use, depending on how much you use, how long you let it mature, how long you let it break down the starches to let it stretch out, there's a lot of variables when you use commercial yeast. And is it fresh cake yeast, rapid yeast, active dry yeast? So there's a lot of factors involved.
All right, so when you're in making a pizza in a wood-fired pizza oven, what kind of woods do you prefer to use? Do you have a mixing of woods? Do you use like post oak with hickory or anything of that nature?
Yeah, in a wood-fired oven, it depends. You want to burn it hot and burn oak? Do you want it to be cherry, almond, and apricot and burn it a little lower? Certain woods burn hotter, certain woods burn cooler. The size of the wood going into the oven and how big the oven is and how big the mouth is, because they're all variables. And is it domed? If you're looking at 900 degrees, it's oak, it's hot, it's not little wood chips. I mean, that's 990 seconds, 60 seconds a bake. If you're, I want to cook maybe like Bianco and cook it a little longer and not be at 900. I want to be at 650, 700. Then you have smaller pieces of wood, different types of wood other than oak. Like, and it's irrelevant to say I use apricot and cherry. You're not cooking in the smoke. That's the one thing that when you get trained or certified in Italy, you're cooking below the smoke. You may dome it for a couple seconds, but you're not smoking it like meat. So it's nice to have on a menu that we cook with apricot wood, but it's really irrelevant, like beechwood aged Budweiser, sort of, I guess, if that makes sense. The thing about the starter, it is cool to say you have a 30-year starter on your menu. It's I mean, you always want to have some romantic conversation piece with somebody, and apricot wood, cherry wood, 30-year-old starter is not a bad thing to have on a menu. It is cool, so it's not, we're not detouring you from that, just to let you know on your question earlier. So you cook with wood?
Yeah, we used to have a wood oven, and same, we used only hardwood, a lot of oak, alder, things like that, but it is fun to get really geeky about like the small pieces for flame and the big pieces for coal, and we actually ended up in the end, we switched over to electric now, but we used a lot of compressed wood, which was really a little more environmentally friendly. It fires really hot, and it works like hardwood or oak. It's not great for coals, but it kind of cuts up into these little pucks, and you can use them for flame. And they're just compressed with heat, and they were cheaper and just more environmentally friendly than using oak or another type of wood like that. Just a suggestion if you see those.
Well, guys, thank you so much for being here.
No, thank you.
Our panel. Thank you, Danielle.
I love it.
And, you know, these guys will be milling around if you have more questions. Thank you all so much for coming.
All right, coming up in 2 weeks, we're going to go back to Pizza City Fest LA for an informative panel about eating with your eyes.
And, like, just examining everything. And we want people to ask why, you know. A person working the pizza station at Flour and Water has a certain perspective, and why, even down to like the setup. Why do we put the salt here? Why do we have this here? And if you're constantly asking that question, why, it will always evolve and show up in the product.
Pizza as art in the age of social media. That's in 2 weeks on May 24th. Remember to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Tell a friend and rate us, please. Also, a reminder to support the show at anchor.fm/pizzacity. We're at Pizza City USA on Instagram, and our website is pizzacityusa.com. Bureaucratic wrote and performed our theme song, and here's wishing you an optimal bite ratio always.